And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
And we're very happy once again to be joined by Sarah Black from the AFL website. Welcome, Sarah.
No, thanks for having me, guys. Sorry, I just had a real brain freeze there. It's been a long day, but happy to jump on and talk to you guys about all things Tigers once again.
Oh, look, and we are... I was just saying before we started recording, it was almost hard to describe the feeling of having actual football at Punt Road in the sun with people watching it drinking beer. It felt like the universe was healing.
Yeah, it really did. And, like, I know this isn't exactly the target audience of the pod, but the first game I covered was Carlton-Collingwood on Thursday night. And when I was trying to find a car park around Princess Park before the game, I saw a big family, you know, half Collingwood, half Carlton, walking to the game, and I almost teared up. Like, it was just, it's sort of hard to explain what sort of the last few months have been like in Melbourne. It sort of feels like a bit of a blur, the whole thing. But to have some sort of semblance of normality was just absolutely wonderful.
So, Sarah, could I ask, can you, now that you've seen football at Punt Road in front of a sellout, now admittedly, you know, it wasn't a large sellout, but, you know, it was great publicity during the week that the game was sold out and, you know, people were talking about it on social media. It really helped build the excitement. What was football like at Punt Road?
Yeah, it was nice. I suppose I have a sort of a different view to it than someone who was in the outer. Because you're so focused on doing the match report and everything like that and, oh, who was that who kicked that and why was that smothered and all that sort of thing, I felt a little bit removed from the crowd itself. I think if you're on that far hill on that Brunton Avenue side, it would have been a really wonderful atmosphere. There were even people outside on the Punt Road, you know, on the other side of the fence looking through who weren't able to get tickets. And there was a real happy summer buzz to it all. I think it wasn't quite exactly the manic sensations we've had before the grand final, those sort of last training sessions that we've had before the grand finals a few times where they've been absolutely packed out. But it was all very happy, people just thrilled to be back at the footy.
It did look great. And I have to say, Andy and I have contrasting views about the Punt Road redevelopment, but I was just thinking, 1,300 people, it's okay. But the 8,000 capacity that they say that they're working towards for the redevelopment, that seems like a sweet spot to me.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's what we've seen with AFLW crowds in Melbourne pre-COVID, was that seemed to be about the figure that we'd get at games at Witten and at Icon was, maybe a little bit more than 8,000, but it's a really nice spot for the moment for AFLW. And unfortunately, we only had 1,000 at the game. And if you times that by 8, it would have been a great atmosphere.
I would point out that you could get 8,000 and still keep the Jack Dyer stand if you really wanted to, but we're getting off the point. Sarah, to me, that I enjoyed the first half of that game so much. And I know that it was a good round, of football all round. There were a lot of good games, but I thought that was the best I've seen us play in the first half. But you're more seasoned professional. What did you think?
No, in terms of an official AFLW game, that's definitely the best I've seen the Tigers. They seem to move the ball with a lot more purpose. There were still like fundamental skill errors. The Lions are a really well disciplined side, especially in defence, which made things tough. I reckon the Tigers looked a little bit sharper in their practice match against the Dogs, but the Dogs probably aren't quite as disciplined as the Lions, which probably would have, you know, allowed for a bit more free flowing footy from the Tigers' end. But definitely signs of improvement, and I'm sure you would have loved the performance of Harriet Cordner. She seemed to just shine above everyone else.
I actually love the game plan too. I loved, we seemed to be deliberately kicking long, and, you know, it was very apt that Dave Asprey was in the room before the game, because there was a lot of down the line kicking going on. But I actually thought that it was perfect for the conditions and also suited the skill set of our players.
Yeah, for sure. I think you can see that Ryan Ferguson's come from that development background. So it's the perfect the perfect role for him really to slot into, is that he's worked so closely with players on improving aspects of their game. Like, it's something he's used to, sort of thing. Obviously, W is a different kettle of fish completely to men's. But the fundamentals of coaching remain the same. And I speak, when you speak to the girls, they absolutely love him, or Ferg. They all call him Ferg. It's never Ryan. They really love what he's brought to the club. He's already been at the club. He's brought to the team. And it just feels a bit more of a, like, fresh start sort of thing.
Yeah, because what you're saying about how well organised the Lions were, because the inside 50 stats were probably more even than the scoreboard, but yeah, that lack of composure sometimes going inside forward 50. But last time we had you on, we were talking about Ellie McKenzie as a prospective first overall pick. I thought she looked pretty good, but what was your reaction?
Yeah, I thought she was too. It took her a little while to work into the game. I think she, you know, not. There's few players who are able to come in and have a Matty Prespakis season right off the bat, their first season of AFLW. Like I think we should stop expecting people to do that. That's completely unrealistic. So, but saying that, I thought her composure was really evident. Like, she took the game on too, which was something that I thought the Tigers really lacked last year. It sort of often seemed to be Conti or bust when it came to sort of bursting through the lines. But Ellie seemed to have the will and the confidence to do that. To me, she was sort of looked like she was sitting on the wing a fair bit. I'm not great at picking out those positions, but that's what it felt like to me. And with Kate Dempsey on the other side, the two seemed to be working quite well in holding their shape as well, which goes back to that, the sort of the discipline of the side and the structures and things that'll just come naturally as the team spends more time together. Because remember, it's only game 7 for them, which seems absolutely ridiculous.
Mm. It actually, she reminded me a bit of our last number one draft pick in a young Lids who was sort of on a similar team that was competitive but not. It was not easy playing on that team, or you know, that you were playing quarters sometimes where the flow was going against you. But she could break the lines and do something special against the flow of play. And I really agree that you could see it with her and Conti that, you know, you need that line breaking and long kicking ability to play that long kick football. And you know, you could really see something in the future. Maybe not in 2021, but you could see something building for the future.
Yeah, for sure. I quite like that comparison with Lids, actually, because, you know, she's strong overhead, she can hit the scoreboard, and as you said, she can break the lines. So I don't think you're too far off with that one. And I think last year we saw, you know, Monaghan, I think she led the competition in metres gained because the ball was down there so often. She was the one bombing it back out again. So we've got Monaghan and Maka Chort down there sort of in defence, but don't have many in that sort of middle line to get the ball in deep where, you know, the Tigers have so many tall targets up forward, just can't seem to get it in there enough. And when we do, the cleanliness of the kicking is not necessarily to the forwards' favour either. There are things that will take time, and I think there was definitely some progress Sunday.
Well, speaking of sort of bright spots, I thought, you know, it's always curious to see how you go with 176-centimetre ruckman, but I thought Gabby Seymour worked for four quarters.
Yeah, I was quite intrigued to see that they'd gone with Seymour as the sole ruck, with Edmonds as an emergency. Just on the back of the fact that Edmonds played all the games last year and that seemed to be the preferred setup. But I think with Cordner coming in, it sort of released Seymour down the ground a bit. And I quite liked it, actually. She's a really athletic player. She's still pretty raw. But there's quite a few volleyballers now who are sort of making their mark in the AFLW as rucks, in sort of undersized a little bit. Ree Watt is the co-captain of St Kilda, and she's sort of one of those ones. She played, I think she might have played for Australia, Ree, in volleyball, and it seems to be quite a natural progression. And hopefully Gabby with time will really start to stamp herself on the competition. I know that, you know, speaking to opposition, you know, list managers and analysts, they really rate her, and they reckon that she'll be a really dangerous prospect in the coming years.
It was interesting. She last year averaged 7 disposals a game, and then on the weekend had 16. So she certainly was freed up in the ruck.
Yeah, for sure. And just seemed to be a little bit more agile at ground level too. Obviously a little bit shorter than Alice, which helps. But you, with AFLW, there's been a few rucks who have come through, like Lauren Pierce at Melbourne, who's really dynamic at ground level, and it just gives the Ds a huge bonus that they've got effectively an additional midfielder there in Lauren. So if Gabby can sort of develop into that role, that'll be really beneficial, I think.
It was quite frustrating. She won the first tap of the game and then we lost the centre clearance, which was quite frustrating. As a former ruckman or a current ruckman, it was quite frustrating.
Mm. Yeah, well, the Lions do have a pretty experienced midfield core, like Emily Bates. Definitely. And Ali Anderson. They've been playing for a long time. And dominating clearances for a long time, and I reckon that showed.
Yeah, the clearance stats were pretty one-sided. I did. Is it rude to ask if Monique Conti had a bit of a basketball hangover? Because she wasn't, you know, maybe that standard is so high of what we expect of her.
No, I don't think it's rude to ask. I would have thought so, except for the fact that I saw her play in the practice match against the Dogs, and that first quarter, she absolutely dominated. Like, you know, there wasn't any public stats, but she would have easily had 10 touches in that first quarter against the Dogs. What happened was that there's a Lions player by the name of Kathy Spark, who's incredibly athletic, about the same size as Mon, and she just sat on her until sort of Mon started to work her way through it in the second half. But Spark was the one who really shut her down.
Yeah, you in your write-up of the top 30 players in the AFL, you mentioned that's what she can expect all this year, is the opposition coach is going to put the tagger to her first.
Yeah. I think especially with Grace Campbell moving on too, like she was a really, really strong ball winner for the Tigers and is now at North Melbourne. So Sarah Hosking has been brought in, but I don't think Sarah Hosking has really ever been tagged at Carlton. So Mon's the game breaker. She's the one who will get the Tigers going. So if you can get on top of her with the depth of the midfield at the moment, that goes a fair way to sort of shaping the centre clearances.
I wanted to ask you about Chut, who had a really interesting game. By the way, 11 kicks, no hand passes. So, again, Dave Asprey is nodding approval from the sideline. I can say this, but and you don't have to say anything, but I thought especially when the game was hot, she struggled a bit, and she struggles a bit with sort of in the heavy contested areas when the ball's on the ground. But the longer the game went on, the better she got. And I just wondered, is she one of the fittest players on the team?
I don't really know, to be honest. That's something I'm not quite across. I prefer her playing, this is a personal opinion, I prefer her playing further up the ground. I don't think she's best suited to a key defensive post, but with the team being as it is, she's one of the tallest down there, so they need her. So I much prefer her running off half back where she doesn't have to really be accountable, you know, heavily accountable for a player.
She's clearly not an aerial player. That's not, you know, that's not her best thing, despite being tall.
She's more run and carry, to be perfectly honest. She just happens to be tall.
By the way, that first goal was absolutely terrible umpiring. I know you can't say anything because you work for the AFL, but we were hosed with that first goal. That was not a free kick.
Which one are we talking about? Sorry?
The Bulldogs' first goal where Chut... the Lions' first goal and Chut and I can't remember the other player involved in a marking contest, and it was called a shepherd, but it was actually just the Lions player fell over in the contest.
Oh, I must have missed that one. We were sort of like the press area is quiet. We're just sort of working out of portables at Punt Road. So, yeah, you can't sort of see everything. But, I'll have to say no comments on that one. I genuinely did not see it.
I think it's fair to say the forward lines are a work in progress still, despite the, you know, having a couple of big names and, you know, Katie Brennan looking pretty lively. But, yeah, the kicking goals is still a challenge.
Yeah, well, I guess if that ball isn't touched off the boot, then that makes a big difference because that's an early settler in the first quarter. I really felt like they lacked pressure at ground level in that, in whether that carries on in through the season, I don't know. But in this game in particular, just felt like when the ball hit the deck, they were just a little bit too tall up forward. And the Lions have a fair bevy of mid-sized defenders who just were able to clear the ball pretty easily.
You would think if anything Richmond has learnt is the value of crummers.
I know. But I guess this is where we see the difference between, you know, the separation between the men's and the women's programs.
Yeah, it did actually. Sorry to overdo these late 90s, 2000s comparisons, but did feel that way, that we had a very talented and tall forward line but just lacked a couple of crummers at their feet. I wanted to ask you a structural question because I know Sabs got a run in the ruck in the third quarter to sort of get her involved in the play. You know, we have to. Katie sort of played. I thought she was our best forward and, you know, could have had three goals if the luck had gone her way. And, you know, Sabs is almost sort of our third tall. Is there a chance that she'll spend more time in the ruck this year?
It's a role she's played previously for the Lions, ironically enough. In the early days of AFLW, 2017, she was an All-Australian, effectively playing as a forward second ruck. And, you know, it's just sort of this year in particular, she's gotten really, really fit. Like we saw her, you know, go on the SAS show and stuff like that. But you can see it on the field that she's actually, you know, built up a bit more of a tank. So I like it because it does get her into the game when things aren't going well up forward, because really she has the talent. She's an excellent overhead mark. And when her confidence is up, she can be a game changer. So just got to find a way to make it all click, I think, with Sabs.
So I suppose there's any number of big questions, I suppose, about the season and crystal balling anything at the moment, given what's happening in Western Australia or elsewhere. But look, assuming we have a season, is there a Richmond game, do you think? Well, and we don't know the rest of the fixture, but which teams should we be keeping a close eye on for that historic first win?
For that elusive first win, yeah. Well, they were drawn initially to play West Coast this weekend before everything went topsy-turvy. This was in the first iteration of the fixture back in December. And the Eagles, watching them against the Crows, they sort of stuck with them for a quarter and a half maybe, and then the Crows put the foot down. And I reckon the Eagles are a definite opportunity to get that win. They don't really have many forward options at the moment, the Eagles. So that's definitely one. Other than that, it's looking pretty tricky. But we have seen teams have horrendously off days, like the Cats against North Melbourne. The Cats aren't that bad, but it just goes to show that anyone can really have an off day, especially in AFLW, to be perfectly honest. When players are part time, they're trying to combine, you know, work and footy in a pandemic. I think it's safe to say that anything can happen on any given day.
Yeah.
I have this image that because they've been kicked around a bit, that when the win comes, often with teams in at all levels of football, it really comes. You know, that when finally the football starts going their way and they start getting hand pass changes together, there'll be the dams will burst and there'll be some heavy celebrating, and I look forward to it.
Yeah, well, one thing that, like, Ryan Ferguson was asked after the game, like, you know, do the girls believe that they can win? And it was a really interesting answer. He was like, yeah, I think they believe too much. Like, that in that fourth quarter, they had the wind at their back and they just got too excited about it, which I guess is a good position to be in. They were, you know, they were hungry for that win, and just they rushed their entries. They kicked, the ball was too high and got caught up in the wind. And just with a bit more composure, one win can quickly turn into two or maybe three.
Yeah, you're mentioning about Geelong. Like, I thought that was our best game last season up at Bendigo, and we were right in it up until probably Katie Brennan's injury. But, yeah, I'm not all that encouraged by playing Melbourne this weekend.
Yeah, the wild card is Casey, though. That's always a wild card. just because anything and everything has happened down there. We've literally had lightning storms. So the D's are in a period of semi-rebuilding, I think it's safe to say. They cleared out a few players, one of which is Harriet Cordner. So she'll be coming up against Tegan Cunningham, who's their big key forward. They would have played against each other a lot in practice and training. But saying, like, while they do have quite a few kids they've drafted, they still do have Daisy Pierce and Karen Paxman, who are two of the most experienced players in the competition, who are sort of the wise heads that I think Richmond are sort of, you know, would look to develop in future years. Those women who really know when the game is on the line and how to deal with it. So it's probably something the Tigers are lacking at the moment, which is fair enough. It's, you know, season two for them and season five for Melbourne.
Yeah, I must admit, I was reasonably impressed with them last week against the Suns. I thought that was a very very professional win, considering what they had, six debutants or... anyway.
Three debutants, yeah. They brought in six draftees, but three debutants, yeah.
Oh, thank you. Now, and thoughts and prayers to everyone who's going out to Casey on Saturday. I wish I was too, but unfortunately I don't have the opportunity. But I know there is a lot of carpooling and arrangements going on amongst the Tiger faithful, and that there will be a small army going out. Sarah, can I ask, and I know you're so busy with the AFLW, you're covering multiple games a weekend, but is there anything in particular with the blokes that you're looking forward to watching this year?
Oh, wow. That's completely out of my headspace. Let me think.
Another premiership?
Oh, yeah, that'd be nice. didn't really get a chance to celebrate this one, if I'm sounding like it. This is a podcast for Richmond supporters. I can sound a bit like an arrogant twat talking about it.
By the way, I loved your match report from the Brisbane game because you could see you were being very good to be fair and balanced, but you could tell that the Richmond paragraph, you know, you talked about Richmond first, and there was a certain love that if you knew your background that was there.
Oh, you try to, yeah. There are a few paragraphs I deleted too because I looked at it and I'm like, no, there's too much there. Get rid of that. No, but for the boys, I would really love to see Callum Coleman-Jones come in and really stake his claim for senior awesome. AFL footy. I think that'd be great. Where he fits in, God knows. Maybe I'm not convinced that Asprey is the second ruck works.
Testify.
Yeah, two rucks seem to work for most of the year. So whether it's Nank and Coleman-Jones while, you know, once his suspension is over, while Soldo's out injured, just love to see him get a proper run at it.
Mm. If you're wanting to get invited back on the show by Andy, that would be exactly the response you would give.
I've been analysing CCJ pre-season training photos for he's really been working on his pipes. His tricep definition is excellent. So I'm excited for what CCJ can do this year.
Good to hear. I think everyone was pretty excited too to hear that Dusty had won whatever version of time trial that they were holding. I think my dad read that. I was on a family holiday and my dad read that out with a lot of glee, and my Geelong barracking mother was not pleased.
Fantastic.
Oh, I have loved I think Harry Taylor did an interview where he said, oh, we would have won except for Dusty. Oh, it's like, just bring all of that on.
And can I just, while we're on this, sorry, Sarah, to get distracted, but like that is, A, you lose the best player on any team that the team's going to struggle. And secondly, the Cats can talk to when they lost Gary Ablett Jr., but after they lost Gary Ablett Jr., they got concessionary draft picks which they were then able to turn into player capital, and they were able to use the salary cap that Gary Ablett Jr. wasn't taking up. we lost Alex Rance. We didn't get anything for him. And we had this great big hole in the salary cap, which we couldn't use on other players because he decided to retire after the trade period. So if any team was handicapped, it was us, not Geelong. So anyway, rant over.
I feel like that's something you've been chewing over in your head for quite a few months.
I think that's actually the third time Nick's heard that. So
some version of it. Sarah, can I ask you one last difficult question? It's,
of course.
You know, we've got, and it's probably an impossible question, but you know, we didn't get to finish the season last year. You know, they're doing hopefully a short sharp lockdown in Western Australia. How many setbacks do you think they can push through and have a viable competition this year?
To be perfectly honest, I think that they're hell-bent on getting a season. They've, you know, Gillon McLachlan and Nicole Livingston have both gone on record numerous times. Like, I've lost count the amount of times they have said that we will get a premier this year. And, you know, McLachlan said that it was one of his biggest regrets last year that the season was ended the way it did. I don't think anyone really blames them. Like, when you think back to March, like, we didn't know what the hell we were getting into, did we? Like, it was such a crazy time, and there's no playbook for handling a pandemic. So yeah, I don't think anyone blames them, but they're pretty determined to get a season away, and hopefully, you know, as we're speaking on Tuesday night, and there's only been that one case in WA, so fingers crossed that ends pretty quickly and we just get back to it. But the issue with W always is the fact that the players have jobs. So, you know, to go into hubs like the Giants did for a month is a huge ask, because the girls are then having to work remotely, and the girls who can't work remotely, the AFL's subsidising some of their, you know, the pay that they would normally get from their other employers. So, it's so tricky, but I think we're pretty confident that we'll see someone hold up that cup whenever the end of the season is.
Yeah, I think they've been remarkable. I was actually just commenting to a few friends today that I think the GWS players in particular have been remarkable about how little they've complained considering what they've been put through. I think it would be nice if a few public officials who are very fond of standing next to AFLW players when they want a good publicity shot help them out a bit getting through this very difficult time.
Yeah, the Giants have been through. It's like you just sort of think about, you know, what are the worst things that could happen to a footy team? And really, the worst things that could happen to a footy team aren't generally that bad. But they've had, you know, one of their teammates pass away in October. They had a player break her neck. They've been, you know, on the road for a month, like, and they're all part-time athletes. It just feels like they've had one blow after another, and they've held up. They've been incredibly stoic. And now they're back home. I really hope that they break through for a solid season, because they really deserve it.
I couldn't agree more, except when they play Richmond.
Yeah, at least Parker tore up the Tigers last time, didn't she?
Yeah. Well, there's quite a history now between the two clubs. Sarah, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it. It's after 10 o'clock in Melbourne, so we appreciate you taking your time out of your very busy schedule to share your thoughts on Richmond.
Nah, yeah. All good. Always happy to talk Tigers.
Well, and I was going to say, can we even pre-book you for the first win? So I reckon that'll be a good show.
Yeah, sure thing. I'll come back for sure.
Awesome.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thanks, Sarah. So, yeah, that was, look, great interview, encouraging performance, good to have footy back. So we already mentioned about training, but, yeah, has there anything caught your eye?
Well, well done, Nick, because as soon as Sarah leaves, the standard of the podcast drops immediately. but yeah, always good to have her on, and fascinating. And we were just debating. We had a further debate for 5-6 minutes afterwards. And yeah, always interesting to hear insights. Treading the house down. Well, Nick, obviously CCJ is the obvious one there. He looks cut and shredded supposedly, and thank you to Tiger Flag, whatever he's calling himself this year, Paul Patrick.
17.
For his good training report, but CCJ outmarked Tommy Lynch at training, which was I know there's just it's stupid preseason hype, but it's always nice to hear. Playing well, looking shredded. Hopefully back ready to make a difference in round six. Because also very good to see Nank training fully, because God, Lord knows we need him fit for round one.
I think CCJ is ready for round five, but I'm really encouraged that he can play practice game, well, the practice game and VFL games leading up to it. So, you know, if the opportunity is there, and you know, I think the idea that it's a marathon, not a sprint, like we've effectively played an extra half season over the last 4 years, with the number of finals we've played. So yeah, I do. I honestly think there's going to be a certain amount of nursing guys through the season, you know. And so, you know, Nank's going to have to carry the load at times, but if we can get CCJ in there, and also very encouragingly, Ivan Soldo started running as well.
Yeah, absolutely. The sort of the rumor is that there is a chance of a 2021 return. I guess other notable points is that you know, there has been certain internet rumors about Marlon, partly based on him missing a few trainings. He was back at training today as we record this on Tuesday, so that's good news. Anything else come out to you?
Well, you're always looking for the younger players who've taken a step forward. Like Jack Ross looks super fit. Will Martin is almost unrecognisable from when he was drafted. I mean, Hugo Ralph-Smith now has a massive mullet to go with a pretty good tank. So yeah, guys like that are gonna stand out, I think.
Yeah, I'm really flat about the Albury game being cancelled. Won't say what I think about that, but yeah, I was really looking forward to seeing the guy. I love preseason for the excitement of the young players.
I know. Thompson Dow, another one. Riley Collier-Dawkins has improved his running, which is good as well. There's unfortunately a few on the naughty list. The track watchers reports. Less than impressed with Josh Caddy's condition, and sadly also Derek Eglemazie-Smith, given he's playing for his career.
Oh, I hadn't heard either of those. Well, that's interesting and disappointing. I rather thought Cads might be a key part of the depth this year.
Well, I hope so. And look, he's a veteran player, so you certainly back him to get right for the season.
Yeah, but not veteran player also sort of struggling for a spot. You know, that's when you put in the yards. Anyway, sorry.
The one player who I'm really encouraged by looking super fit is Dion Prestia. We've seen how good it looks when he has a full crack at it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, Dion, Nank, Jack, they're all people who are, even Lynch, are perpetually injured in our preseason and are all seem to be up and about.
I know. It is. There is an injury list, but it's pretty manageable. I mean, we've got Noah Cumberland coming back from the knee reconstruction. And it's hard to think Basher Hooley's going to be fit for round one. Given he's still at the running lap stage.
Yeah, old man calf injury, but you know, we can cover that. Sydney Stack is obviously still in Western Australia. What do you have any further thoughts on that, Nick?
Oh, so I did a bit of research on what his penalty is likely to be, and it was pretty uncomfortable. I sort of made the mistake of assuming that Western Australia had similar standards to the rest of the country, where, you know, COVID breaches earn you a hefty fine. But no, they've been pretty regularly handing out custodial sentences of up to 6 months, which for COVID breaches, which, I don't even want to start on the broader implications of that, but just like you're destroying his job for the whole year, essentially.
Mm. I'm not going to comment because it would make me so angry. So I think we should move on.
Yeah. But yeah, the sort of very unfortunate bottom line is that I just don't think we can plan on him being part of our setup this year. And yeah, could be a pretty tough year ahead. Speaking of another fairly unfortunate bit of news that they found that Shane Tuck had quite advanced, I don't know the abbreviation, but it's CTE, so he'd had fairly significant head trauma. That made pretty uncomfortable reading.
Yeah, and look, it's difficult. It's chronic traumatic encephalopathy. Sorry, I pronounced that extremely badly. Obviously, neither of us are doctors. It's uncomfortable. Look, Shane was, I think, the bravest player I've ever seen sort of close up. He did incredible things with his body. So, it's extremely sad. I'm not sure. You know, they're doing what they can with concussion protocol, but that wasn't actually Shane's problem. I think Shane, I don't think he actually got concussed that often, if at all. It's just, it affects everyone differently. There's not a universal standard. It's a really difficult issue for contact sports.
He did do quite a bit of boxing as well, so...
That's a very good point.
That probably hasn't helped either, but yeah.
And actually got a savage knockout in his career.
Yeah. And I think, look, the AFL's already said that they'll have at least a 12-day compulsory break. But yeah, that would have big implications. Like someone like when Nathan Broad got... knocked out in the finals, like he's automatically out for the following week.
Yeah, that was my first thought, but somehow I think we would have managed to beat the JWS anyway.
Well, yes. Look, I had two more things I wanted to cover. The first was anyone hasn't listened to the great podcast that the Australian football video guys have done with a friend of the show, Conrad Marshall, on I think it's called Tiger Tales, which is the story of our 1995 season, where they managed to do a podcast that's almost twice as long as the video itself, talking about the video. It's pretty great.
Yeah, good turn of phrase. Also looking forward to reading, which I haven't yet, Con's piece on the weekend about the Sky Whale. So he is nothing if not prolific. What else is on your mind, Nick?
Well, the other one was, look, it seems absurdly early to be talking about free agents and off-season moves, but I was there... It is going to be a really interesting season because the AFL's had a couple of rule changes where they've had the traditional category of sort of players like Nick Flostone who coming out of contract for the first time after I think it's 8 seasons become a free agent, but anyone who's ever been delisted is automatically a free agent when they're out of contract, and anyone who's changed clubs as a free agent is then a free agent again if when they come out of contract. So there's a lot of, I think it's close to a third of the competition who's going to be free agents in varying forms this year, including nine Richmond players. And I thought I'd go down the list, and I want you to tell me which of them are most likely to resign, and you know which of them probably a chance to get a monster offer from somebody else. You good to go?
Yep, good to go.
Okay, first one, I think an easy one, Dylan Grimes.
Yeah, he'll stay. Why would he go?
Yeah, and apparently contract talks are already well advanced on him staying. You know, you've been careless with one All-Australian defender. Might want to keep the other one.
Yeah, and it's just that if you think about the, you know, one-team player, good structure, doesn't particularly seek or want the attention, going to another club, a lot of publicity, all the pressure on him, doesn't seem the right move for him.
Mm. Sticking with the defenders, Dave Asprey.
He, again, is another guy who's, and he's a proper country lad, not a pretend farmer like Grimes is. So I can't see him seeking the publicity either. I mean, you know, there's a potential for him getting forced out if someone came with a huge checkbook. But is someone really going to come with a huge check for Dave Asprey? I suspect not.
Mm. Yeah, he's turning 30 this year, I think.
Yep.
So, look, if somebody came with a 3-year offer, I think that'd be you might find that hard to say no. But yeah,
unlikely to come though, isn't it?
Unlikely to come. Yeah, you'd think again the preference would be to stay. I think the player who's likely to get the most money as a free agent, Nick Boston.
That's a tricky one, isn't it?
Mm.
Again, like doesn't particularly seek the spotlight, doesn't really want the attention. Because if like you've got to put yourself in the position of the other club, if you're signing Nick Foster and you sort of want him to be a leader, like maybe not necessarily a captain, but sort of in your leadership group within a year. So is Vlossy that player? Is he giving you that premiership success that, you know, he'll guide your younger players? I don't think that's what Vossi wants to do. So again, just maybe this is, I kept saying the same thing to every player, but I suspect he will stay too.
The other thing, you know, speaking of concerns, he's had a few concussions. So, you know, maybe that gives you pause in offering him a really big deal, but yeah, he's one where, you know, you can see why other clubs would think about offering him a big deal.
Yeah, but we're going to pay him a bit. Mm. Like, you know, if we had a choice, I think, yeah, he would come. We cut a few corners to make the offer close enough to keep him to stay.
Mm. Speaking of beloved players, Camden McIntosh.
See, that's hard.
Mm.
Because you know, is he a star? No. Is there a potential that, say, a Western Australian team would want him running up and down their wing?
Like Fremantle wants a bit of leadership, physicality.
Yep, bit of a personality. Like Camden seems like the kind of personality that isn't too fazed by various, you know, playing in a sort of more challenged team. Yeah, and presumably whatever he's on, it's not a lot at Richmond, and he'll get sort of offered the same again. So yeah, you could see that happening.
Mm. I think perhaps the two easiest ones, Shane Edwards. Well, three. Shane Edwards, Jack Riewoldt, and Basher Hooley. Do you think which of those players even gets offered another contract?
Well, should all be interesting. No recent injuries.
No dropping form.
No, nice big break in the middle of the season meant he had a cracking final season. So there's not, I reckon of the three, he's the most likely to play after this year.
Oh, and I think a chance of multiple seasons.
Yeah, I think Hooley would be the most likely to retire. And I think if it all depends on Jack, whether he stays relatively injury free. What do you think?
Yeah, I think even Sheds could look at a 2-year contract. Like, I think he's no sign of decline, and that sort of lighter framed player that does age pretty well. Yeah, I think Hooley's chronic calf injuries, which as you said, it's the old man's injury. So I doubt he'll go around again. And yeah, Jack, I think it's a question of A, what's his form like, and B, does he have the passion to front up for a 16th preseason? I think that's going to be the key factor for him. But you know, I think if he wants to go on, the club will support him.
Yeah, but I think it's the heavy caveat here is that any player at that age, a moderately bad lower body injury, and that's probably curtains. They don't, you know, they often don't get the chance to rehab it. It just takes so long, and the risk of it becoming chronic. So, yeah, obviously no free agency risk. You know, why would you do it if you're the other club?
Our last two, and I actually think these are, if they play well, they're a good chance to get an offer from someone else. But Ben Miller and Marbia Chole.
Well, Ben Miller, I don't have that confidence at all. I think he need to actually play some good football in the VFL to get someone excited. Let alone get a senior for game. Marbs. Don't you think if someone was really after Marbs,
they would have had a go already?
Yeah, like
he's been on a 3-year contract.
But you know, you just figure if someone had come up and said, you know, made a reasonable offer and with a big pay rise, they would have thought, well, okay, well, fair enough, we can't keep you. The thing with Marbs is he didn't improve this year. Now I know there is a preseason
when he had the chance, and he did improve the year before. So, yeah,
there was a preseason report that he looked really good, but you know, you'd also expect Marbs to look good in preseason when you know, he's the type of player who would. Yeah. So, I don't know. I don't quite share your confidence about their AFL future, but you know, Marbs, it's a valuable position.
It was more the point that if they do show anything, I think they're the type of players where, you know, a struggling club might throw them a 2-year contract that we can't match.
True, but what happens in, let's say Marbs actually becomes a semi-competent forward, and then Jack retires, like suddenly the whole game changes. Yeah. That's two pretty big ifs, but you know, it's not impossible.
No. I think Jack Rewalt's replacement's not on the list, frankly. But
I think you're right. Yeah.
So the women's season continues on. They haven't released the fixture for beyond round two yet. So it's Melbourne this week. The men have already had their pre-season cut back to a single game against Collingwood at Marvel Stadium, and I have to admit, if I had to choose perhaps the least romantic venue to have a pre-season game, it would be Marvel Stadium, but as it's in Victoria, I assume it'll go ahead.
It is a bit sad, isn't it? So looking forward to the Adelaide game. The Albury game.
I know, but yeah, it's... You know, hopefully I have some pre-season games. But yeah, it's as much as I enjoy training montages, yeah, it's a while before the real thing. And I do wonder if it'll be a bit of a slow start to the season with having played fewer games than usual.
Yeah, that's a good point. we might be sort of gnashing our teeth a bit at the stand early on. I mean, in some ways, it feels like our team's just barely finished playing.
Mm. Well, and I haven't finished playing, finished watching replays of key moments of last season, so, you know.
And Nick, just before we go, we should mention you put it out to me just before the show that we're not up to it yet, but we're coming up to our 10-year anniversary, so we're thinking of appropriate ways to celebrate it. So if anyone has any suggestions, we're open to them.
Yeah. What we lack in sound quality, we make up for in persistence.
That's true.
I'm Nick.
I'm Andy.
We're Richmond Tiger Talk.
The Tigers are premiers for the 12th time in their history. Rioli, this time, 4-3-2-1, it's a goal, right on the Tigers. Whoa, what about that? A 4-3-60 in slow motion, just down the arms.
Oh, jeez. Had four shots on goal, and that was his worst. Big arm takes the mark, and it's all too much for Leon. Well, he's an accurate set shot, the big fella. 4 out of 5 so far this year. Make it 5 out of 6. The skipper goes and goes, and then tries to lace it out, but no, he doesn't. He kicks a goal. How sweet it is, eh? Pickett lines up.
Going off everywhere at the moment. Pickett's having an influence in his first game of footy.
Started with him.
Yeah. Dusty's dangerous. The swarming pressure is overwhelming.
Didn't want the body contact. He kept the body free. The pickup's unbelievable. That's a play of the game. There's the play of the game.
We underestimate the footy brain and Dusty Martin. You look at his physical ability. Champion data would tell us 7 out of the last 9 finals, you can make the case for him being best on ground.
We never weak until the pile of sirens gone. Like the tiger of old, the strong and ribald, for we're from Tiger. Yellow and black, we're from Tigerland.
And I think they were a better team last year than they are now.